The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, it's Monday night. Hey there, welcome in. Chris Stigall, along with our Meet the Candidate guest for this Monday night, Charlie Giroux. We are glad to have you here. Sorry we're a little behind. My fault entirely. A bit of a scheduling snafu, but nonetheless, we're here. I appreciate your patience. We really appreciate Charlie hanging around for us a little bit longer than we anticipated. And the best part of a concept like tonight is that you're to hopefully come on in and ask Charlie questions. I get to do this all the time. Charlie and I have spent some time together talking in the past. I hope you've heard those shows. But if you're watching tonight and you're inclined, I hope you will submit your own questions in the forum below and let me know what you'd like to ask Charlie, and we'll get right to it. But Charlie, without further ado, welcome in. Thanks for being here tonight.
It's great to be with you, Chris, on this beautiful Monday night in the Delaware Valley.
How has the campaign been going? It has been it's a crowded primary. We've talked about that, getting less so all the time. You're still hanging tough. How's the process been for you?
We're hanging tough, and we're crisscrossing the state, doing more events in a day than some of the candidates are in a week, and I'm really proud of that. I was in Philly this morning. I'm back in Harrisburg this evening. Tomorrow, I'm heading out west, so we're literally crisscrossing the state. We took the great tour of Route 6 across the northern tier of Pennsylvania over the weekend, and you really get a chance, Chris, to see how awesomely beautiful Pennsylvania is.
You decided to run how long ago now?
About a year ago. I didn't wake up one morning and say, gee, I think I ought to be governor. As you know, G.T. Thompson, who is the dean of our congressional delegation, called me up and he said, look, Charlie, we've got a lot of candidates out there on the track, but I'm not necessarily convinced they can beat Josh Shapiro. I am convinced that you can. And I said, well, you know, tell me why. He did. I thought about it, prayed about it, talked to my friends, talked to my business partners, talked to my clients, and made the decision to run. And we've been running very, very hard ever since.
So professionally, Charlie, give folks your background. Where do you come from in the private sector? I know, for instance, we talked with you while we were at CPAC. You've been active on that front nationally as chair there at the American Conservative Union. But what do you do professionally outside of that?
Well, I began my career, as you know, Chris, working for Ronald Reagan. And I will always be very, very proud to have played a very small part of the history-making administration of Ronald Reagan. And I stayed with him after he was out of office, did a lot of his advance work on the various trips that he took, and actually worked on his funeral. So I was with him right up until the very end. And I am, as you indicated, the vice chairman of CPAC, very proud of that as well, the leading conservative organization in the country, and certainly the biggest conference by far. And you've been a great supporter of CPAC and somebody very visible and active at CPAC. But during the day, when I'm not running for governor, I run a small business. I have put my signature on the front of paychecks rather than on the back, as some of the candidates have. And I'm really, really happy about what we've done in a small way. We're a small business, but it's grown over the years. It's about 22 years old, 23 years old. And we're here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the state capital.
What do people maybe not know, Pennsylvanians not know about Harrisburg? I've often found that there's a disconnect. You know, having lived in the Southeast and primarily around the Philadelphia and suburban areas of Philadelphia, I feel often like it's another planet from Harrisburg. Like it's just, it may as well be in another state almost. It's hard for me to articulate how disconnected I have felt as a Southeastern Pennsylvanian from Harrisburg. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, because that's you're like one of those guys, Chris, that believes that when you go west of Paola, you fall off the edge. You know, when I was growing up, I was pretty sure that, you know, once you got past Downingtown, the great abyss lay out there. But Harrisburg is actually a great little town, and it is a small town. But, you know, historically, Chris, I think it is significant to realize why the capital is in Harrisburg, because the founders wanted to get the state capitals out of the centers of influence and power and big money. So Philadelphia went to Harrisburg. New York went to Albany. North Carolina went from New Bern to Raleigh. and the other state capitals, most of them moved kind of into the hinterlands. And so that's why we have the state capital in Harrisburg. And it's a really nice little town, very beautiful. The Susquehanna, the world's largest unnavigable river, runs through. In the middle of the Susquehanna is a little island where there's a baseball team, the minor league franchise of the Washington Nationals. Wish it was the Phillies, but it's the Nationals.
And because of that disconnect, though, I often feel like, politically speaking as well, people don't maybe literally pay much attention to what's going on in Harrisburg. Maybe that's always the case. I don't know. Perhaps every state is not really aware of what their legislators are doing. And I find so often this audience, which is the most engaged and informed there is, you know, we're often surprised when we hear about things like Act 77 in 2019. They passed what now? What is this? Why are they doing this? You know, it always feels like we're the last to know. I don't know if that's inertia. I don't know if that's a lack of communication. How do you feel about that?
Well, your listeners and viewers, Chris, certainly are well informed, and thanks to you. But yeah, there is always a little bit of a disconnect between state government and its citizens, and there really shouldn't be. You know, they used to say that watching the legislative process was like seeing sausage made. You're just really better off not watching. But what happens in Harrisburg is so vitally important because it does touch on our daily lives all the time. And Act 77 is a prime example of some really bad legislation that was allowed to go through without a lot of public scrutiny. Because if there had been that scrutiny, I don't think it would have passed because it was on its face unconstitutional.
I'm asked about that more than anything else. How did that happen? Why did Republicans let that happen? How do you answer that?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to defend it because I think it was a bad vote, Chris. But my sense is that there were a significant number of Republicans that thought they were making a quote unquote good deal because they got rid of the straight party voting and exchanged that for mail-in, no excuse mail-in voting. It was not a good deal and it was not a legal move. And unfortunately, we've paid the price for that.
I'm really trying to understand if that's something Tom Wolf saw. Almost like a don't throw me in the briar patch kind of a thing. Were Democrats, the Democrats opposed Act 77 while the Republicans charged ahead. Wolf signs it into law. It then ends up benefiting at least the top of the ticket in 2020 remarkably. I mean, it's like, you know, it was almost like I talked to Republicans later who said, yeah, I guess if we had known then what we know now, we would not have passed it. So many of them have admitted to me. What did Tom Wolf see, do you think? Did he look down the road and see something we didn't?
Well, this will be a big surprise to you, Chris, but Tom Wolf doesn't call me very often to offer his insights. And his but, you know, I'm guessing that that's correct, that he, you know, maybe saw something that others didn't. Nobody could have foreseen the pandemic, and that certainly exacerbated the problems with Act 77.
And so this is the first question of the night. And if you have a question for Charlie Giroux and you're watching, I hope you'll submit it. Charlie's running for governor in Pennsylvania. And we're talking with every candidate between now and primary day. Peter wants to know, do you believe there should be primary challenges to those who voted for Act 77, which, of course, you're in the middle of a primary right now. So we have at least two Republicans who voted in the affirmative for that. Right. Is that I think I've asked you this before. Is that does that disqualify them, I guess?
Well, I think it's a significant issue, and voters are going to have to take into account that both Senator Cormann and Senator Mastriano voted for Act 77. I mean, that's a fact. That's not a political charge or some, you know, dirt from under the rug. That's a matter of public record, and they're going to have to defend that vote. I don't think it's defensible. I don't think most of your listeners think it's defensible, and I don't think you think it's defensible, Chris.
I'm very confused. I earnestly, I mean this. I am trying to figure out the dynamic in Harrisburg. I've been trying for the decade that I've covered it. I don't understand Pennsylvania Republicans very well still. I have many, many friends who are Pennsylvania Republicans. I'm a registered Pennsylvania Republican, but I'm speaking to the Chester County Republicans soon. But you get to Harrisburg and Republican is not evenly applied, and definitionally it means lots of different things. And I continue to puzzle over a Republican-controlled Harrisburg that continues to spit out definitively not Republican things. Make sense?
It does. And I mean, look, part of it is geopolitical, Chris. A Republican from Delaware County or Philadelphia or Bucks County is very different from a Republican from McKean County or Forest County or even where I live on the shores of the Susquehanna. So you've got to factor that in a little bit. And let me say, the Republicans from those areas are light years better than the Democrats who might represent those districts. But there is a pretty broad chasm of opinion and of constituencies within the Republican Party. But having said that, the Republican Party in the legislature and as governor, I will put my shoulder to the wheel and make this happen, has to stand up for principle and has to be the party that defines the agenda and fights for our individual liberties and personal freedoms.
If you have a question for Charlie, please submit it in the forum below and we'll ask it. How do you herd those cats, Charlie? If you're a Governor Giroux, I don't know. I hit rewind and go back to Corbett and trying to privatize liquor. Ultimately, it was the Republicans that they couldn't get all on board. There were a couple of recalcitrant Republican senators, and I think it was because of unions, perhaps, that had outsized influence. Can you navigate those waters? Is there something? Is there a tactical maneuver a guy like Corbett just couldn't get pulled off?
Part of it is working with the legislature, and that, you know, grates against some people's skin because they want you to fight with them. But, you know, that's a losing battle. Politics is always the art of the possible, Chris. And so I will work with the legislature, but I'll work on them as well, because sometimes letting them feel the heat is better than asking them to see the light. And my old boss, Ronald Reagan, did it, in my judgment, the right way. He worked the traditional corridors of power, if you will, the typical legislative corridors. But when that didn't work, he went directly to the people and let them become his principal advocates and lobbyists. And when the people tell their legislators, we want this, and I think they clearly would have with liquor privatization, for example, then legislators will act. And I say, again, it's more feeling the heat than seeing the light, but they're concerned about their reelection. And if you make that the principal cause of any issue, they're going to react and react properly.
Could Ron DeSantis' style of governance in Florida work in Pennsylvania, or is there something about him that's stylistically only applicable to Florida?
Now, you bet it could work here. And if you want to see it, give me a try, because I won't emulate him on every point because my personality is different than his. But stylistically and practically, what he did in Florida was a far, far, far better model than what Tom Wolf and Josh Shapiro gave us here in Pennsylvania. So I'm a DeSantis.
What do you see as the, if there was one issue that you prioritize that you say, boy, that's the thing. If I'm Governor Giroux, let me bite at that apple first.
Well, the immediate bite, as I've said to you before, Chris, is election integrity. We have to make sure that we can trust our elections, because if we can't, there aren't any winners. And so there's a multitude of things that need to be done. You've talked about them. I have. I can review them again tonight. But election integrity is really at the heart and soul of everything we do. And then the next thing is to rebuild our economy from the lockdowns and shutdowns and mandates and overreaches of Tom Wolf and Josh Shapiro. We've got literally a third of our small businesses. And as you know, I'm a small businessman. A third of our small businesses are shuttered and probably aren't coming back. So we've got to create a dynamic job-creating economy again. And I think that's right at the front of my agenda as governor.
Do you feel, Charlie, like you would weigh in on the do you need to? Do governors, should governors weigh in on issues like the transgender athlete phenomenon? Absolutely. That we're now seeing it in the University of Pennsylvania? This swimmer happens to be, you know, smack in the heart of the national debate. But and I know at Penn it doesn't so much apply, but do governors have a role in this debate?
Yeah, they do. And I mean, look, what about the female swimmer who finished second in that competition? I coached basketball, as you know, Chris, for a number of years. And my last stint as a basketball coach was coaching AAU women. These were all really prime athletes, young women that were going to get Division I or Division II scholarships. You only play with five in basketball. If you had two boys coming out to play on that team, guess what happens? Two women that are on the court are now sitting on the bench. And two women that were sitting on the bench are pushed off altogether and aren't playing anymore. So it not only destroys scholarship opportunities and hope and opportunity for the future of these young women, it destroys careers. And Title IX goes right out the window with this transgender sports stuff. you should be required to be a biological male to play in women's sports in the PIAA in Pennsylvania.
I imagine a Governor Giroux saying something like that and tackling that subject, and I imagine Philadelphia media's heads exploding. You know, Tom Corbett's a fine guy. I don't mean to pick on him. He's not here to defend himself. But I know he never felt very comfortable and seemed to really kind of want to avoid the media scrutiny that came with Philadelphia media being pretty vicious to Republicans. They always will be. Do you anticipate that? I mean, a cultural phenomenon like this, this transgender athlete thing, I can just imagine the viciousness that would come at you.
Well, and I just think I may have misspoken a moment ago. I meant to say, I want to be clear about this, you would have to be a biological female to play right. in girls' sports. I think I said male, female. And biological males would not be permitted to play girls' sports. And yeah, I think I am going to take some heat over that issue, but I'm happy to do that. You know, I always have lived by Harry Truman's old adage that if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. I want to be in the kitchen stirring the soup. And this is a very, very important issue because, as I say, it really takes away from the opportunities of young women who have worked so hard. I mean, I remember coaching the girls' basketball teams and how hard they worked. They have a right to see the rewards of their effort.
If you have a question for Charlie, by the way, Linda, harumphs, your foolproof voter ID and election oversight are a must. Yes, number one issue. So Linda likes that. That's your top objective.
And look, voter ID is a no-brainer in my judgment. I mean, I talk about planes, trains, and automobiles, Chris. You can't get on an airplane. You can't get on a train. You can't rent a car without a photo ID. Why should you be able to go in and vote in our elections without the same thing? I mean, we have a voter ID requirement for first-time voters. We ought to have it across the board. And to me, that's just plain common sense.
Politically, I don't suppose you probably have much in common at all. And it predated my arrival to Philadelphia, but I can imagine the last time Philadelphia felt like they had a spokesperson or an advocate, it might've been Ed Rendell. I don't know if any other governor had achieved that prior or since. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but can a governor make Philadelphians feel like he or she's their governor too versus from, Tom Wolf has never felt like he knew Philadelphia from, you know, Utah. I mean, he never felt like he, like a space alien lands when he comes to town. And that's seldom. You know what I'm saying?
I do, Chris. And look, one of the things that I want to do is make every Pennsylvanian, whether they're from Philadelphia or Punxsutawney, feel important, have their voice heard, and realize and know that what they believe is being played out in Harrisburg. Eddie and I, before we went on the air, were talking about Philadelphia. As you know, I grew up in the Philadelphia region and I know the city. You know, we were talking about, you know, the ward that he lived in and the parish that I grew up, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, my roots in the Southeast allow me to understand what's going on there and advocate for the people there. But I've traveled around this state for many, many years. I didn't start with this gubernatorial campaign. I've been to all 67 counties multiple times, not just during this campaign. And I want to be a governor for every Pennsylvanian. As I said, from Erie to Delaware County, from Philadelphia to Punxsutawney, from Scranton to Washington County, there are so many diverse neighborhoods and areas and regions of our state. They all need to feel like they're part of a dynamic, prosperous future.
And to that point of being dynamic and prosperous, energy was huge here. The Trump campaign made it a central piece of their campaign when they would come through Pennsylvania. Even through COVID, they talked about energy, energy, energy. I mean, almost to my liking, to a fault, I felt at that time in history, COVID might have warranted a little more focus from the Trump folks. But I appreciate now 40-year high inflation and gas prices at record highs or energy prices through the roof. Energy. And Jeremy asks, what do you do to revive Pennsylvania energy? What role does the governor play in this national debate right now about energy and energy supply?
A huge role. And I mean, the governor has a variety of things immediately to do. One is to get us out of the so-called REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative that Tom Wolf placed us into illegally and running the General Assembly. That's a tax on every Pennsylvanian, and it's one that we simply cannot afford. Get us out of REGI, and then allow all forms of Pennsylvania energy to be developed. I'm a great believer in natural gas. I think it's done tremendous things for Pennsylvania, not just in job creation, but in lower costs for all consumers and an increase in our manufacturing here in Pennsylvania, which had languished prior to the boom caused by the Marcellus Shale. But I'm a great believer, too, in coal, in nuclear, in wind, in solar. I'm pro-Pennsylvania energy. We have an opportunity, Chris, to not only be energy independent, but to be a huge exporter of energy. And in so doing, to really, and I mean this sincerely, provide for our national security, because we won't be required any longer to buy our energy from people that hate us. And we're seeing that played out right now in Ukraine. There are some troubling aspects to the failures of the Biden administration on the energy front. And those troubling areas are places where Josh Shapiro and Tom Wolf have let us all down. Pennsylvania energy is the vital linchpin to a growing, vibrant, healthy, prosperous, family-sustaining economy for our future.
If you have a question for Charlie, submit them in the comment section below, and I will ask them as they roll in. So, Jeremy, thank you for that. How about Wendy's question? Plan for reducing crime in our cities, supporting our cops, holding criminals accountable, a DA that will actually do his job. I just read a story about Larry Krasner today in an interview from Fox 29, and he said something insane. I wish I even had the quote in front. I should have kept it. It was crazy. It was something to the effect of, at least it's not double the history-making numbers. So that's a it was the strangest silver lining he could find.
Tell that, Chris, to the victims of those crimes. Tell them that, you were only a minor statistic when you got beat up or mugged or, worse. The Krasner administration is a complete and total disgrace. And Wendy's question is well asked. And here's what I'll do as governor. Instead of simply talking about it, and bluntly talking about it is important, because putting the focus and the spotlight on the failures of the district attorney of Philadelphia and his Soros-backed administration are important. But Philadelphia is under-policed right now. And rather than defund the police, a Charlie Giroux administration would fully fund the police. We'd figure out a way, Chris, to get 1,000 more police officers on the streets of Philadelphia. The one difficult part of that for me is to figure out a way to not have Jim Kinney and company being in charge of the funding for those additional police. If we can do that, I think we can make it all work. The citizens of Philadelphia would be much safer. The citizens of Pennsylvania would be as well.
Years ago, and I'm talking decades and decades and decades ago, I come from Missouri, and an interesting thing happened in Missouri a long time ago that the Kansas City, where I specifically come from, the state of Missouri took over the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. And it is the only municipality police department in the state that the Capitol runs because of its corruption from so many decades ago. And it's still that way. Can Harrisburg take control of law enforcement in Philadelphia? Could you ever see it getting to that extent? And would you support it if so?
I would prefer that Harrisburg not do it. I'm not a big government model guy at all, as you know, Chris. I would prefer to have the citizens of Philadelphia take back the DA's office and elect somebody there that will do the job. But if that doesn't happen, there have to be mechanisms in place by which the rule of law can be returned. And so I'm open to all suggestions and all possibilities.
Yeah, and Andrew's question, I think, is somewhat in line with that. How can we take back PennDOT? I thought that was policing. This is a PennDOT question. Take back PennDOT, put state police pension back in the general fund where it belongs.
It's a good question. And one of the issues right now with increasingly high gas prices, I just went to the pump today. It cost me over $75 to juice up my vehicle. And I'm thinking, I need a mortgage, folks complain about the gas tax. But part of the problem with the gas tax is that instead of going where it's supposed to go, which is for roads and bridges, much of it, beginning with Ed Rendell and increasing over the years, is being siphoned off for other purposes. As Andrew's question suggests, the state police are part of that. Now, don't misunderstand for one second. I don't begrudge the state police one penny. In fact, I think they're entitled to additional funding. But it ought to be done out of the general fund, not out of the motor license fund. It's now to the point where almost 70% of the state police budget is being funded out of the motor license fund, which is designed by law and by statute for our roads and bridges.
What about SEPTA? I'll throw that in there, kind of as a sidebar, but somewhat related. I don't have a concept of what the rest of the Commonwealth thinks of something like SEPTA, but every time I read it, I seem to read there's quite a bit of consternation from Republicans around the state about it.
There is, and I mean, there is about public transportation in general, and ultimately it has to be user, and it has to be sustainable, and it has to be affordable. And unfortunately, in many respects, SEPTA isn't that all the time. Act 89, I think, gave SEPTA some of the tools with which to do those things. I hope they'll avail themselves of them.
If you have a question for Charlie, please ask it in the comment section below, and I will ask it of him right away. Let's talk about the issue of life. I have actually not brought this up with any other candidate, so I'll ask it of you. Governors of both parties, frankly, have not had the most impressive position on life, and we've seen some pretty heinous stuff. Maybe one of the ugliest stories I've ever covered in my tenure as a host in Philadelphia was the story of Kermit Gosnell operating basically out in the open right under our eyes. Is Pennsylvania too hospitable to that kind of butchery?
Yes. And let me be very, very clear, Chris, and I'm glad you asked the question. When I announced my candidacy, I said this very simply. If we won't fight for the unborn, the defenseless among us, for whom will we fight? I'm a fighter. And if we won't fight for the unborn children, for whom will we fight? You know, Josh Shapiro has told us, quote unquote, abortion is healthcare. Think about that. What he really wants is abortion at any time, for any reason, and if he can get it, paid for by the taxpayers. And yet they talk about safe, legal, and rare. That's a complete canard. We have to make abortion dramatically, dramatically rare. And I think we're going to get the opportunity to do that, Chris. So on the specifics of the abortion issue, yes, I would sign the fetal heartbeat bill that Tom Wolf vetoed and that Josh Shapiro would as well. Yes, I would sign the Down syndrome bill that Tom Wolf rejected and Josh Shapiro would as well. No, I would not allow for taxpayer money to be used for abortions, as Josh Shapiro clearly wants to have happen. And I would do everything as governor and to encourage the legislature to put on my desk bills that would make abortion truly rare. That's 60 million plus abortions in this country since Roe versus Wade. That's roughly five times the population of the entire state of Pennsylvania. Think about that, Chris.
It's just staggering. Charlie, the armchair quarterbacking is easy for all of us who aren't in leadership positions in a once in a 100 year pandemic. So there's a small part of me that wants to be fair and say, look, I can't imagine what it is to be a governor at a time like that when you find out there's this mysterious thing that's mysteriously killing people. So I can't tell you that I know the moment or point on the calendar when people could have been wiser or smarter or made better decisions. I will allow for a period of time. I haven't really decided what that is in my mind of confusion or maybe even a little bit of panic or a lack of clarity. I'm willing to be generous with anybody in that position to a degree. But we saw a governor and a secretary of health that just clearly went beyond the pale well after we knew what this was and who it was killing and the controls and the metrics. They continued on and on until the citizens of Pennsylvania had to rise up and pass a constitutional amendment to rein it in. How did you read COVID over the last 2 years and how it was handled in Pennsylvania specifically?
Well, you're very gracious. And I mean that sincerely, Chris, in saying that, you know, it was a pandemic that none of us foresaw and that we didn't have plans properly in place to address and that there was, you know, perhaps some confusion along the way. But how is it that Ron DeSantis got it so right when Tom Wolf and Josh Shapiro got it so wrong? How is it that Kristi Noem figured it out and we didn't? So I think that, you know, if you wanted to go back in history and Monday morning quarterback with, you know, 2020 hindsight, maybe after those 2 weeks to flatten the curve, we should have taken another look. And you're right. It took a constitutional amendment, actually two, by the people of Pennsylvania to scale back the powers of a governor during an emergency. I had one huge problem with the Wolf administration through all of that, and that was when they were taking senior citizens out of hospitals and putting them in nursing homes to die. But as you know, Chris, Rachel Levine got her mother out of the hospital and into a luxury hotel before any of that happened. Those are the kinds of things that leave people just absolutely cold, and they should. So I'm proposing an additional constitutional amendment, Chris, over and above the two that the voters passed last year. And that would be this, a constitutional amendment that would give all of us, you, me, and all the citizens of Pennsylvania, the right to recall and remove from office any governor that thinks he or she is a king.
Wow, that's impressive. Do you anticipate, Charlie, that you could revisit privatizing liquor sales as Corbett tried but didn't get done with the Republican legislature that he had?
Yeah, I think there's still more to be done. Unfortunately, Chris, politically, it became less attractive because you now can have limited sales in, you know, convenience stores and that kind of thing, and in supermarkets. And that's what a lot of consumers wanted. So the political pressure was lessened, but the underlying issue remains. And as you know, the history of this whole thing is kind of comical. We had a governor, Gifford Pinchot, who in the days after Prohibition wanted to remain a prohibitionist. So he said, let's set up a system that is designed to do two things, make it difficult and expensive for Pennsylvanians to purchase alcohol. And, you know, government actually did it right. It's pretty difficult and pretty expensive. And we ought to take the next steps to completely divest ourselves of that really failed system, which is a odd combination of socialism and prohibitionism.
You're the son of an immigrant family, as memory serves.
I'm not. I'm not the son of an immigrant family. I am an immigrant myself.
You yourself are.
I myself am. I carried a green card, Chris. I'm a naturalized citizen, the first Latino to ever run for governor of Pennsylvania. My story, real quickly, is that I was born in a slum in southern Brazil. My birth mother realized she couldn't take care of me. So she took me to a little mission, put me up for adoption, and asked the people there for one thing. She said, I want my baby to go to America. Because she believed that if I came to the greatest nation in the history of the world, I might be able to learn how to read. And so when I talk about opportunity and I talk about the freedoms necessary to pursue those opportunities, believe me, it comes from the depth of my soul. So, yes, I'm an immigrant, a legal immigrant, and very proud of my heritage.
How do you talk to and about those who have come to Pennsylvania, either legally or illegally? I know during the Trump administration, for instance, there was a raid on the Kennett Square community, particularly in the mushroom production facilities, for instance. I remember reading about that. And, you know, that's often branded as cruel or harsh or inhumane or what have you. You have a very unique background with this, so I wonder if you could speak to it. Is it soulless? Is it heartless? Is it necessary? How do you view immigration, illegal or otherwise, and enforcing it?
I think the rule of law, Chris, is fundamental, no matter what issue you're talking about. And I'm a great believer in the system that Father Theodore Hesburgh talked about years ago, which is slamming the back door of illegal immigration shut so that we can keep the front door of legal immigration wide open. So I'm a great believer and supporter in legal immigration, but I think we have to do everything that we can to shut the back door of illegal immigration, because ultimately, if a nation can't protect its borders and doesn't really have borders, it at some point ceases to be a country.
So as we see the administration at present dropping, I mean, we've seen the footage, we've seen the file footage of these planes delivering people who have traveled here illegally, quite literally right off the tarmac and being bused to communities all over Pennsylvania. How does a governor curtail that? Is there something a governor can do or should do to stop that?
Yeah, and I mean, the easy, snappy answer is, you know, send them down to Delaware because Joe Biden wants them all anyway. And I laugh about that sometimes along the campaign trail and throw that out as a suggestion. But there are some serious steps that a governor can take. And one of them is to not allow funded entities to house those illegal immigrants unless there is a clear compact between the federal government and the state government. Because here's a situation where the Biden administration and the feds are foisting upon Pennsylvania something that we didn't agree to. So unless and until we agree to accept these illegals, and I don't think we will, They shouldn't be housed in any facility that receives state taxpayer or federal taxpayer money.
Do you think the election of 2020 should have been certified? The final vote count in Pennsylvania, should that have been certified, in your view?
Well, you know, I respect those that voted against the certification. I did some things, as you know, Chris, myself, after the November election in 2020, because I thought there were a lot of serious problems that needed to be addressed. I really am not anxious to relitigate all of that. We took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. They kind of washed their hands and played Pontius Pilate and walked away. So my focus now is not in the rearview mirror, but right through the windshield, looking down the road at all of the issues involving election integrity that are coming our way, because election integrity really is up to all of us. And we're going to have to be extra vigilant, preserving any evidence that we see in the future of wrongdoing so that we can clean up some of the messes that we saw in 2020.
We have a Supreme Court problem in Pennsylvania, though, don't we?
We do. We do. And I mean, this is another example, Chris, of elections having real consequences, because several years ago, the Democrats won three seats. Very unusual for three seats on the Supreme Court to be up in one election. They won all three. And they took a majority that will be very, very difficult to turn around. But I think the voters of Pennsylvania are ready to do that. And I think you're going to hear from them the next time these justices of the Supreme Court are up for retention.
Charlie, I'll let you close with anything that's on your mind. I guess I'll always like to ask if people can be helpful to your campaign or more interested in hearing from you, or maybe even inviting you to a function or hearing you speak somewhere. Please let us know. And also, I'd ask you to just close with any thoughts you have.
Well, Chris, you're very kind. I love being with you. I love the conversation. You're on top of the issues as no other journalist is, and I give you a lot of credit. But for anybody that would like to reach me, you can go to my website, charlieforgovernor.com. But you can call me personally. I'll give you my personal cell number, and feel free to call.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I have gotten so many notes from people that say, "That's for real. I've called him. I've talked with Charlie. You really are giving out your number."
This is not a gimmick. This is my personal cell phone. I don't intend to change it once I'm governor. So people can call me. I think a governor has to listen to folks. And so my number is 717-877-8194, 717-877-8194. And I'd love to hear from your viewers and listeners. I'm happy to talk with them.
Wow. Have they all been nice? Have people been nice?
I got to tell you, Chris, because you asked the question about life. I got a call from an obstetrician who worked for Planned Parenthood. And I thought this is going to be a very interesting call, because she obviously didn't agree with me on the issue of life. But the conversation, which lasted 15 minutes or more, was very respectful. And we actually found some common ground, because I asked her in the course of that conversation, "Do you believe that the unborn child is a human being?" And I think she recognized there was a little bit of a trap there, but she paused and ultimately she said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "Then we have something to talk about."
Wow. Wow. Charlie Giroux. Pleasure to catch up with you, my friend. Charlie for Governor.com. Hope you'll come back and see us. Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's always great to be with you, and it was fun tonight. Thanks so much.
Our Meet the Candidate series continues every single Monday here at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Eastern on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Good night.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.